Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 293 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. We are back from vacation, apparently. Oh, we took a little break there. I'm Trevor Anderson. I'm going to send you over to Jason Rugard. He will give us the rundown.
On the brand new episode of 2016, the first episode of the year, we're starting it off strong, getting into some trivia, our countdown of the top 15 best films of 2015, our thoughts briefly on the Globes, and some little trivia there, as well as reviews. Got a lot of reviews today. Trevor and I's thoughts on Star Wars, Hateful Eight, The Big Short, No Escape, American Ultra, Mission Impossible, Point Break, and Strange Magic. It's going to be a stuffed show. Stick around. We're not doing the game, are we? We're not doing the game right now. So,
no, we're not. We're not going to do the game.
Yeah, we retired the game for the year.
Let's just go. Let's just go right into it. What trivia you got for me?
I got some trivia for you here. I'm thrown off here. I'm like, I'm out of my element. I feel like I just got into the gym and didn't warm up. You know,
Donnie, you are Donnie right now.
I am Donnie. I just wandered into a conversation.
You're out of your element,
like a child who wanders into a room. All right, let's go here. So last night, Leo, who's been nominated for a staggering 11 Golden Globes.
You're calling him Leo now, huh?
Yeah, well, we're close like that. You know, usually I call him the Lion, but
that's what I was on there.
I'm going to be formal
exactly.
About it.
Exactly.
You know, he's been nominated 11 times, which pretty much means anytime he makes a movie, it's a Golden Globe nomination waiting to happen. He's now won three of them, including one for The Wolf of Wall Street and for The Aviator. But
so does he have a chance at an Oscar this time?
I know, right? He's been nominated four times already, but he is yet to win. I do think that if he does win, it's going to be on the strength of that movie and not a cumulative type situation, you know, where they give an actor for the body of work. But we'll get into my review of The Revenant later. My trivia question is that since Titanic, DiCaprio has been the top billed star in every movie he's appeared in, except for one. Do you know that movie? Can you name it?
Well, I could take a pretty good guess. There's only one movie I can think of where he hasn't been the main star. So my guess would be Django Unchained.
Right. Yeah. It's okay. The only movie he hasn't received top billing in the last 16 years. And that's crazy because that is such a meaty role too. Obviously,
it could have been The Departed.
Character.
I mean, that could have been a possibility, but he was still kind of the main character in The Departed, wasn't he?
Yeah, for sure.
So I can't think of really of a movie other than that where he wasn't the main character, so it would make sense.
Well done, sir. Although that is kind of a trick question in the sense that he was a part of Celebrity, which the Woody Allen ensemble cast piece, but since that was an ensemble piece, doesn't really I guess everything's an ensemble piece.
That's a real ensemble piece.
Yeah. I guess every movie is an ensemble piece, technically.
Yeah.
So you watched the Globes last night. What were your overall feeling about the situation? Do you think it was better than in years past?
There
do you
was
think
a situation. It was a little been there, done that. I think a little bit because with the Ricky Gervais stuff, we've already, you know, a little immune to it at this point, almost. Right? Were you a little bit? I mean, it still worked and everything, but I don't know. A couple years ago, it seemed like everyone was having a lot more fun at the Golden Globes than this year.
I've heard things when people talk about these award shows. They say what you don't see is that people are mulling about in the background and talking at tables, and really it's chaos.
Yeah.
And that on TV it looks a lot more controlled, so it doesn't really matter what the fuck's going on. So I could see, you know, why he would be thrown out. I thought his interaction with Mel Gibson was really the highlight of the whole shabam. And Gibson handled it pretty well for what, you know, what he was – what was being said about
him.
Yeah,
it's a little surprising,
you know,
right?
Yeah, you know, I liked his line about, you know, you don't need the drink, I'll put you to sleep backstage. I liked how tense that got because that was obviously unscripted. But at this point, can we leave Gibson alone? I mean, it's such an easy and obvious target, and the guy keeps showing up to these things.
Well, he doesn't leave himself alone, so.
True.
I mean, give it enough time, and I guess we can forgive it. But he is trying to make a comeback right now, so he's got to kind of take the beating, right, in order to get back on everyone's good side, in a sense, right?
He's had a movie that's been in post-production for over a year. That's the only project he has lined up that I'm aware of. So, I mean, I'm not really sure why or where his career stalled out at. I mean, I know why, what's the statute of limitations on that? I mean, that's, we're going on, 15 years from that. So,
well, but even from that, we've heard all throughout after that, right? He's been horrible to people who have worked with him, and, just downright rotten person.
I've heard the
in a scary way. So I don't know.
I've heard stories of that kind of talk about Denzel Washington from numerous people that have worked with him, and they're vetting him
Russell,
last night with the Cecil B. DeMille Award. Yeah. So I mean, it is what it is. It's just get caught in the public eye doing these things. I guess it's a little bit different if you do them behind closed sets and everyone's kissing your ass and you're making everyone money.
A lot of people have gone way more public with their Mel Gibson tirade run-ins than people have gone. With other people, I would guess, because we'd imagine, we talked a lot about David O. Russell. I imagine he's still on his worst behavior. Even though Jennifer Lawrence says she loves him
and she wants to be buried next to him, which is one of the odder moments of last night's telecast.
But who knows?
I did let out an audible cheer when Stallone got the award for best supporting actor last night, which was obviously the high point of the huge Stallone fan. And not just saying because I'm a fan, I think he deserved that award. And I'm a little concerned now because people think, well, is he the front runner for the Oscar? I start thinking back to when Burt Reynolds was cast in a similar situation with Boogie Nights in 97. He won the Golden Globes and didn't get the Oscar, even though he was considered the front runner. And last year, even Keaton himself won the best actor Globe and didn't win it for the Oscars. So this doesn't mean anything, but great speech.
Completely different voting. So
great speech, though. And I'm tired of hearing this quasi controversy of who he left out. I mean, Hillary Swank left out her fucking husband in an Oscar speech, and she's getting half the shit that this guy's getting already. So
he forgot. I mean, plus with the amount of gracefulness that he is given these guys, Coogler, he's kind of just been like, the dude's amazing, right? He's been these guys' cheerleader.
He's
championed all of production, throughout all of the release, throughout all of this. So, yeah, I don't blame. He just forgot. Like, there was obviously no ill will. There was anything about it other than he just forgot. He's an old man at this point. Give him a break.
He said backstage before any of this controversy really had sprung up that he didn't even realize he'd gotten a standing ovation when they told him. He said, did I really? Because he said he wasn't really aware. He was trying to stay aware of the moment. But, I mean, this is a huge moment for the guy. And I thought the ending, even if without the controversy, the ending with my best friend I want to thank, just – it was pitch perfect. So I'm kind of – this is a non-issue as far as I'm concerned. And I don't want to see it impede on the guy's Oscar chances at all.
I don't think anyone's going to care.
Yeah, exactly. I did say go Rocky when this happened, and a couple people that were around started cracking up that were spectators. So, you gotta love Stallone, or not? This release lately? What they said from Netflix, the CEO, that the Ridiculous Six has now become the most watched thing ever on Netflix. Did you read this?
Well, it's probably true because it's the only new thing,
right? And it was. Premiered so heavily.
What else are people watching? Yeah, they've been doing a pretty shit job of getting anything on there worth watching. So, it's not surprising. It's the only place you can see it. Yeah, as well, right? So, makes sense.
I heard somebody's counter argument to this when I was talking about this with somebody who told me that they were knowledgeable in film. We started talking, and I brought that up, and they told me that maybe a lot of people thought that it was Tarantino's Hateful Eight.
That's awesome.
I mean, does that even hold water anywhere? Does that argument fucking stand a chance anywhere?
No, because anyone that went and saw Hateful Eight was a Tarantino fan. They knew what they were going to go see.
You'd know it wouldn't be on Netflix.
They weren't this dumb. Yeah, they weren't. They were seeking out Hateful Eight, not Ridiculous Six.
Thank you.
And
that's why I wanted to hit this person with my elbow, but I refrained. So, moving on.
Instead, you hit him with your very soft fists.
I just open hand to smack him on the forehead with palm strike him three times in a row rapidly. Let's get into the stuff tonight, though. This was the reward show here. It got me in a kind of awards mood. I want to talk about the top 15 movies of the year, because last show we talked about first. It's time to go the opposite side.
Are you agreeing with me yet that this is kind of a dud of a year?
I wasn't gonna until I looked at my top 15, and it could definitely be there could be some holes punched in this top 15, but I think my top 5 is pretty.
There's
solid.
A lot of good movies, I'm not saying that there weren't a lot of good movies. What I'm saying is that I had such high hopes for a lot of things this year, and they just turned out to be okay. So we got a lot of okay movies.
I'm going to stick with what I said last show, that the movies I liked, I really liked this year, and the movies I didn't like, I venomously hated, and I didn't find a lot in the middle that I gave a shit about at all.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I felt like I was very, very divided.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah, this is the first year that I've thrown together a list like this where it's just thrown together, you know? I give a real big shit about, like you say, the top five. Yeah, sure, like those are really great movies. Everything else, I just kind of throwing it around like, yeah, all right. So should we start this off after that amazing? I'm sure everyone's on the edge of their seat now.
I know that. I mean, exactly, because they agree with us all the time. So I know our fans are very well informed. And since our list
was
so close.
What movies do these guys kind of like to put on their top 15?
We're really selling the shit out of this list. All right. Well, my bottom five here, or the beginning five on this list.
Well,
15 through
15.
10 is really just honorable mentions. But 15 to me is I'm going to put the biggest hit of the year was Jurassic World to me. I thought this was a nice little reinvention of the franchise and exactly what I wanted in a summer blockbuster. Had a great time at the movies with this. And hearing that John Williams score once again on those speakers was just fun all over again. Reminded me of being a kid. I like Jurassic World.
Cool. My number 15 is Pixels. I just found it to be fun, really. And I don't care what anyone says. I like Adam Sandler.
Hey, Ricky Gervais has said that Schindler's List was funnier.
but Ricky Gervais is also a complete moron and just says stuff. So, but yeah, I thought it was fun regardless. You know, I like Christopher Columbus. I like Adam Sandler. I thought it worked for what it was, but it is my number 15. So,
let's clarify that. You mean director Chris Columbus and not the explorer and
both
Italian equally. Navigator of the 1400s.
Yeah, both equally. Yeah. Christopher Columbus is the best.
I know you're still upset. You don't get that day off work. All right. In my 14th spot, I have what I think is the funniest movie of the year, Ted 2. I know I'm going to get a lot of shit about this one, but I really think that this one delivered. This is splitting people down the line. They've seen it. Some people love this movie. Other people hate it. I thought this was hilarious and not as good as the first one, but damn close. What do you got for 14?
All right. Well, my number 14, I mean, if you picked that one, I haven't seen that yet, but my number 14 is The Duff, which is embarrassing to say, but I did enjoy this film. Of course, if I had seen Ted 2, this probably wouldn't be on my top 15. See, so I got in trouble there by not seeing everything. But this is Designated Ugly Fat Friend, stupid teenage comedy thing. But I thought it worked, you know, in the vein of Easy A or Mean Girls. It was a smart teen comedy for a change.
Yeah, it got great reviews, so everyone was in agreement with you on that. What do you got in the 13th spot?
In the 13th spot, I put Paper Towns, which I thought was pretty good. Was okay.
This is like the little girl coming out of this arena right now. The soft spot of your list.
It's just low end. I mean, I can't. This is just what I saw. You know, like
the
I
fucking
said, I
longest
some other
ride.
Things, but I can't.
If you got the longest ride, the 12th spot, my friend.
Don't give away the top five.
I
haven't seen that yet. But if he's anything like his father.
And he's not speaking about me. So in my 13th spot, I have McFarland USA, which was the Disney kind of formula sports flick that came out earlier with Costner. But I thought
I thought you were going to say Formula One. How fast were those kids going?
That would have been even better. I mean, shit, up in Solano. But no, this was great. I thought this one really delivered and wasn't expecting much from it, but kind of restored my faith in these kind of movies.
These are the inner city kids that ran right track.
Well, these were the Bakersfield kids that ran.
Oh, that's
track.
Right. There's a Bakersfield.
I mean, I would really call
rough
it inner
town,
city. I'd
rough
say basically
town.
The opposite of inner city. But yeah. And these kids were fast as shit. So it's the cross country team, McFarland, that beat everybody. Really good. And Costner, once again, just proves that he can play a coach so well. And any athlete, he commands the screen. I really think he's underrated.
He does. He's got that father figure type thing down.
He would have killed it in When the Game Stands Tall instead of Jim Caviezel, who played that role like a benevolent authority figure. And it's not really what it needed, a little bit more edge, but that's neither here nor there. All right. In the 12th spot, what do you got?
I have No Escape, a little thriller. I'll give my review later on in the episode, but I thought it worked, you know, for what it is. A little over the top, but still effective. You know, it gives you a pretty good idea, kind of your worst nightmare of what it would be like being stuck in a third world country when a revolution takes place.
Yeah, that's a sleeper hit. That's got nothing but positive word of mouth from everybody I've heard talking about it. And it did okay at the box office for what it was. So there must be some weight behind what you said. I haven't seen it yet, but I do plan on seeing that. In the 12th spot for me, I have Black Mass, the Johnny Depp gangster thriller that was really more about his performance than the movie itself. It was a little bit episodic for my liking, and I thought that The Departed covered a lot of the same territory a little bit better, but nonetheless, still an effective gangster movie.
Hmm. Cool.
All right, 11, what do you got?
My number 11 is The D Train. This is a movie that might fuck you up a little bit if you watch it. Jack Black and James Marsden get together a little bit. Jack Black is just fucking crazy, but so is James Marsden. Everyone's pretty much nuts in this movie. But a good, dark, odd fucking movie.
You said that was a hard watch, so I stayed away from it.
Because
I like those guys. You said that it'll stay with you for a long time.
It does. After. It stays with you. It's so weird and kind of off-putting, and you know, I don't know. With those characters, you like them sometimes, and you hate them other times. Yeah, so it's an interesting movie, I'll say.
All right, in the 11th spot for me, I have Spotlight, this critically acclaimed movie, which I thought was good, but I didn't think it was the best movie I saw this year, obviously. And I thought that it really lacked a satisfying ending, and maybe that's because the story itself in real life doesn't have a satisfying ending. But I wasn't surprised that it got shut out of any award last night at the Globes, even though it was nominated for numerous things. I think it deserves nominations, but at the same time, I don't think it's going to win much. Hmm. All right, so now we're down to the top 10.
We've made it. We're here.
Rather painless. Those really were our honorable mentions of the year so far, and this is what we think.
I can't believe Jurassic World's not in your top 10.
No, it was an honorable mention. I think my top 10
is how much you tried to sell me on that movie.
I still stand by it. I still say it's one of the top movies of the year.
Well, apparently not top 10.
No, you know, and I left out something else, which I think you're going to give me a hard time for later, and I'll tell you, I could have easily switched out the Jurassic World spot with that, but we'll get through it because I'm sure it's going to be on your list. I think our lists will be fairly similar, though.
So in the 10th spot. One movie maybe that would be. All right. Number 10. Who wants to go first?
Go ahead, sir.
Me. All right. Number 10, I got Ant-Man. Just because at this point, the Marvel formula, I think, works. And it works here. And unfortunately, it's getting to the point where it's kind of interchangeable with any superhero. But it still works. So, yeah, you can't really hate on Ant-Man.
Is that because of Paul Rudd, too, or is that because the template's so good?
A little bit, but I think mostly because the template is so good, you know. And obviously, Paul Rudd's good. They do really cast very well for these, so.
And everybody seems to be going up for these, and it almost seems to be like an Oscar category itself next year, you know, best performance in a superhero film. All right, in the 10th spot for me, this is my wild card pick, is The Kingsman, The Secret Service, which I really wasn't expecting much from and was pleasantly delighted and kind of thrilled on occasion. I thought this was a strong year for the spy genre, even though James Bond's Spectre wasn't that greatest. I thought, nonetheless, Kingsman was fun and reinvigorated a subgenre.
Cool.
What do you got in the ninth spot?
My number 9 is going to be Star Wars. I felt a bit let down by this. I got to be honest. We'll get into this when we do the review.
But yet, it's still made your top 10.
And we'll do the whole spoiler thing. Yeah, because there's. It was a fine production, you know.
But
again, for this year, you know, and I haven't seen Creed, and I haven't seen, like I say, Ted 2, and a couple other things that maybe would have pushed some of this list down a little bit, you know. But Star Wars was Star Wars. It just was. A big letdown from what everyone said. Everyone goes proclaiming this as a perfect movie for some reason, somehow. And it's okay.
All right. We still made your top 10, interestingly enough. And the ninth spot for me is Mission Impossible 5 Rogue Nation, another spy movie. And really what I think could possibly be the high point of the series. I really like part 2. I know I'm alone in that. But this is the strongest story-wise, and I thought the ending was nicely done and very much in the vein of an intelligent spy thriller and not just some sort of blockbuster entertainment. This mixed good popcorn summer thrills with some smarts and some good filmmaking overall. Good time out at the movies, I thought. Really enjoyed this one.
Cool.
Eighth, and for you.
My number eight is Mission Impossible 5.
Attaboy.
I think we should talk about this movie later on as well. Awesome movie. Stick around. We'll let you know why. What's your number seven? Let's get through list.
I'm on eight.
You're on eight? Oh, shit. I'm trying too hard to go. Okay, what's your number eight?
Yeah, number eight for me is Inside Out, the Pixar movie that premiered and just got best animated film at the Golden Globes. I really thought this one was – I know they do good stuff, but this one really – for me, for whatever reason, everything worked in this movie from start to finish. I really enjoyed it.
Hmm.
All right, seven for you.
Jurassic World. I thought this was a great comeback for this. The way that they weaved parts 1 through 3 into this and created a truly new film was pretty astonishing and something that I thought Star Wars attempted and utterly failed at.
You know what's cool about Jurassic World, which they had, like, the characters in the movie had a built-in nostalgia factor for the past parks, which we had for the past movies, you know? So it was kind of – it was all synergistic. I liked that about that movie quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Seventh spot for me is Love and Mercy, the biopic about Brian Wilson, the Beach Boys singer. Paul Dano was nominated last night, didn't win, but John Cusack does equally fine work, and so does Elizabeth Banks in a kind of an offbeat biopic that – should have gotten a little bit more attention, but it did do fairly well for a small film at the box office last summer. In the sixth spot, what do you have?
My number six spot, I put Avengers Age of Ultron just because, you know, I'm really into Avengers at this point, and I liked it.
My goodness.
You know, it's not anything good. I think I mostly was just getting to revisit those characters again, and I hope that, you know, with the Captain America stuff, at least maybe they can do, maybe we can go a little bit darker with some stuff, you know, because Iron Man 3 left us hanging on that in that regard. And yeah, I think we're all jonesing for it at this point, right? Aren't we? A little bit of some dark Marvel stuff.
Am I the only one? I think so. I'm not really jonesing for much Marvel, although Civil War looks damn good.
There you go. Yeah, thank you very much. You'll take it. You'll go, oh, no.
I still haven't
caught
it.
Play coy, don't like it, but
Avengers was just okay, I thought. In the sixth spot for me is Steve Jobs, the biopic that didn't do well.
Really? You put that at number six? I didn't think that would make your top 10.
I did because of the fact that it was so dense and so well written, and I just, you know, you can't, it's not the greatest movie of the year, but it is a movie that holds weight and that left an impression on me when I left the theater about I thought about scenes and the way things that were shot and moved around. So it is amongst the best movies of the year. It's just not the best. All right, now we're down to the top five. What do you got in your top five?
All right, my number five is The End of the Tour, a movie that I really just fell in love with. And I really can't say a single reason why. You know, there's no like amazing moment in this movie. It's just a very easy watch, and it makes you fall in love with that guy. What was his name? David
Wallace Foster.
Thank you, Wallace Foster.
I sheepishly admit I haven't seen that yet, and I definitely won't because I think it might have made my top 10 because I love those guys, and you've said it's great, and I've heard that from many people, so I got to check that one out too. Top five for me on the fifth spot is Straight Outta Compton. Another biopic this year about a musician or a musical group, but this one was done with such energy and music made such an impact in this movie. And it's captured the time and the excitement of performing. And I couldn't say enough good things about this movie. Just, I love scenes where they have artists, the impetus of songs, you know, being created.
They're impotent?
That's from all the drugs and alcohol. But when they were creating things, it was great. It was great. The erections were fantastic.
That is cool.
All right, what do you got in the fourth spot?
My number four, this may be the movie you were referring to. I got The Hateful Eight. I don't know if that's the one you were referring to.
No, it wasn't.
No? Okay, well, maybe we'll talk later on about something else then. But I really liked The Hateful Eight. I thought it was, overall as a movie, yeah, it fails. But I individually, scene-wise, I think it's really great, and I really like the dialogue and everything. I feel like your description of Steve Jobs is kind of would be my same description for this.
I had similar feelings towards both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Number four for me is While We're Young, Noah Baumbach's film that we both proclaimed to be great on the show earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. I can't tell people to see it enough, and I have a feeling you'll be talking about it here shortly, so I'll let you move on to your third pick.
My number three is Kingsman, which I thought was just fucking balls to the wall awesome. Pull no punches, just a great action movie. And I would love to see more movies take chances like this, you know, just do something off the wall.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. This, I can't wait for the sequel on this, too. I thought it was a star-making performance by that kid as well. I can't think of his name, but the kid he played, Eggsby.
I can't remember his name either. He's been in other shit, though.
He's coming out in Eddie the Eagle, the flying British handicapped kid, which got fucking laughs that trailer. That's screening I was in the other night.
That's sad. Is it a true story thing?
I honestly, when it started, it looked like a Saturday Night Live parody. I thought it was like, is this Andy Samberg? And then it's hard
to do that.
It was earnest, and I was like, my goodness, I can't.
Believe you never go full retard. It's like one of that never. Kind of a thing.
Yes, man, you should have known. They should have known. It's definitely that kind of thing. My goodness. All right. The third spot for me is really the movie I enjoyed the most this year, but I couldn't put it in the top spot, is Creed. The continuation of the Rocky story is my personal favorite movie of the year, but from a filmmaking standpoint, there are better films out there, but this was just...
Well, apparently there's only one or two, right?
Yeah, there's only two, and they're both excellent. So this is excellent as well. Any of these could have been interchangeable.
I think I know one of them, but I wonder what the other one of yours is.
Great, great fucking movie. Everybody should see Creed. People that I know that don't even really like Rocky have gotten into this and said how touching it was. And just,
I'm sure, because people say they don't like Rocky, but if you set them down and had them watch the first one, they'd love it.
Exactly. I mean, you don't have to see all of them to get this, but like I said, if you've seen, the more Rocky you've seen, the more impact this will have, and the more little things in this you'll notice, and just, it's a great movie. It's generational. I mean, family, this movie is a...
And they just announced number two, so...
Yeah, my goodness, coming in November 17, which is a little scary to me. I mean, I don't like how... Stallone loves the sequels, I'll say that.
Well, I don't know. So long, why so long? I think, I don't know if Coogler's going to come back for it or not. He's supposed to be, he's doing the Black Panther movie, so maybe they had to push it back for him.
Well, then I would like to see them push it back just a little bit, but I don't really want to see Rocky die on screen, and at this point, that's what we're going to go to. You know, yes, it's coming.
Yeah. He's going to be finally too tired. He's like, I don't want to make any more. Just kill me.
Sitting on my ass. Write me out of this. It's going to be the Han Solo effect. Spoiler warning.
Yeah.
Oh, did I do that backwards? Sorry. All right.
Creed's going to kill him. Yeah, you want to go? Me? Who?
Go ahead, sir.
Me? My number two is Mad Max Fury Road, which is, and like I told you earlier, my number one and my number two are hard for me because I think they're both fucking awesome. But in the end, Mad Max came in number two. My God, talking about balls to the wall and just putting it all out there. Master filmmaking. I mean, just wow.
Really is. I mean, that movie, there's nothing wrong with that movie.
No. Nah.
The only thing you could be said of it is that the story is thin, but really that movie isn't about story. And none of them were.
It's plenty thick with the world that he creates, you know.
I would rather have that.
I'm fine, yeah. It doesn't need to be.
How many other post-apocalyptic movies have been plot-heavy and visually thin and are boring as fuck to watch?
Yeah.
So, there you go. Second spot for me is The Big Short, which I think has all the ingredients of a timeless classic. And this is the movie that is the Wall Street-type movie with all of the energy and darkly, darkly comic streak to it. This is actually one of the funnier movies of the year, too. Great performances, liberally breaking fourth wall by all actors involved, and humorous and intelligent at the same time. Very hard to do.
So,
all right, what's the best movie of 2015 in your opinion? What is Trevor Anderson's pick?
Well, now I'm going to say that you did leave something off there.
Yes,
I think I know what your number one is, and what the hell, man? My number one is While We're Young, because I just fucking love that movie. It's so well written. One of those things that just blew my mind when I was watching it, and there's no explosions in it. Yet somehow it's still just as good. So
it's as involving as anything you'll see this year, especially if
it's brilliantly written. You know, if Mad Max takes, a madman in a sense to direct that out and be able to just orchestrate that, then While We're Young is exactly the same way, just in story instead of in, on set road rage nonsense,
Right, right. Yeah, it's as complicated as anything you'll see this year, and as it stayed with me. That movie, it did stay with me for quite a while after. I was still figuring out things that it had presented and catching up on little subtleties. All right, the best movie of the year, in my opinion, is The Revenant. The absolutely just fucking draining experience of watching it is enough to make you think of Apocalypse Now with a streak of Terrence Malick. And I really thought this was a worthy movie to call Best Picture of the Year, not just because it has some sort of prestige behind it, but because it actually is a hell of a production. And the filmmaking is spectacular. The acting, you can't – it's magnificent in all the departments it's supposed to be, but it's also sneakily – has a little spiritual side that isn't Crash, like like Point Break.
It's not in your face.
Yeah, it just comes off as a. I mean, you might think it is when you see it, but it for its context, like Apocalypse Now is, it works. So
why?
So you want to know what I left off my list? I think you figured it out, and you want to know why? Is that what you're asking me?
Yes.
Yes, I did not include Mad Max on this list. I could have included it anywhere along the way. I just did not because of the fact that. There's so many good blockbusters this year, and something had to go. I could have
like what you had 15 movies on there.
I could have switched
you're
that
out of
out
your mind
with Jurassic, with Mission, with Kingsman.
I'm also interested that Star Wars was not there.
I didn't. I thought I enjoyed Star Wars more than you, which we'll get into here in a second. And apparently, I enjoyed it less than you.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised. So Mad Max and Star Wars did not make your top 15.
Nor did Hateful Eight.
So I don't. Yeah, well, that one I kind of. The Hateful Eight's at least an eclectic taste or whatever. Like, I can understand that not making it. But Mad Max, I have no understanding of.
And Star Wars, I think,
it's really weird.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, Mad Max would have been, I could have fit it in there at some point. But if it comes.
God, it should have been your top five. What's wrong
with
you?
If it comes anywhere, it comes right at 16. I'll put it like that.
It comes in your face is where it comes.
It does on occasion. But only when it's nice. Would you fuck me? I'd fuck me. And on that note, let's take a quick break.
Boy.
And we'll be back with some reviews.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Why haven't you seen Jaws?
I've seen Finding Nemo. That's close enough, right?
Why haven't you seen The Usual Suspects?
Because I already know who Kaiser Soze is.
I can't believe you haven't seen Videodrome.
What? Has anyone seen Videodrome?
You haven't seen it.
Okay. How about I start a podcast where someone will introduce me to one of these great movies I've never seen before, and in return, I'll have them watch a superhero movie. Film-wise, the Why Haven't You Seen This Film podcast. Find it on iTunes or Stitcher Radio.
Okay. I want to know what poor schmuck he made watch Steel.
I consider that lucky.
Hey, that's hard to find.
You're coming from, yeah. You can find that on VHS. That's about it.
I don't think they pressed that to DVD. They were like, fuck it. I'm not wasting with gigabytes on this asshole. Yeah,
they did, but they immediately burnt into flames.
Exactly.
Just,
they unmagnetized themselves. Yeah. Very strange.
All right.
All joking aside, we got reviews, and you got a taste of it here on the show because some of these made our top of the year. Some didn't. So let's go ahead and start with Trevor and I's thoughts on Star Wars. Now,
Star Wars.
I really did enjoy this. I thought more than you, but you put
apparently
this on
your
top.
Apparently, you didn't enjoy this at all.
No, I did. I really did enjoy this. This was a solid little movie. I would give this a good 3 stars.
Yeah,
I'd say
a little, all right.
This wasn't reinventing the wheel at all. This was an overly simplified retelling.
This was a commercial. This was a corporate commercial for Star Wars Land and Star Wars memorabilia, right? It's a disgusting movie, really. I did, because it's fine when you watch it, but this movie, when I look back at it, there are moments when they damn near break the fourth wall and just turn and look at the audience and go, can you believe it's a Star Wars movie? You know, it's absolutely, and it's dumb. It's one of the dumbest movies I've seen in a long time. Like, I'm supposed to believe this shit?
Nah, see, I thought Kylo Ren was well done. I liked the way he looked.
Okay, Kylo Ren's
a pussy.
Hey, guess what? Everyone's a pussy in this movie.
There's not
a single person in this that wants to do anything. You want to run down this? Oh, we can go down this route.
I mean, shit. I mean, no,
this is my number 9 favorite movie of the year. I don't know. It didn't make your list.
I'm not going to stick up for a movie I didn't put on my top 10, but I mean, I just thought it was solid. Not spectacular.
Produced, you know, that's the only thing I can say for it because it's it's really boring as all hell. I mean, again, with the droid, we're after the droid, the whole fucking movie, we're after the droid, and that, and it seems to lose sight of any emotional detail, you know. I mean, we come across Princess Leia as the resistance, and she's not doing anything but sitting on her fat ass, right? I mean, no one's done anything in the past 30 years in the Star Wars universe. No one has done shit.
Instead of searching for the droid, they should have been searching for Leia's front fucking teeth. Where were her upper teeth?
Yeah, I don't know. But let's put it this way. The Black Stormtrooper, right? What's his name? Ren? No.
Finn.
He's Finn. Thank you. Well, there's a lot of R's. Ray.
Ray and Ren.
You know, yeah.
And Finn.
And Finn. I know. There's a lot of people. So the Stormtrooper, yeah, he turns good, if you will. Not really. He just pussies out. Doesn't want to be a Stormtrooper anymore. He's seen Kylo Ren. And he's seen him stop the fucking laser, right? So he knows that the Force is real. He knows all this shit. And yet we have a moment where Han Solo turns to these two and tells them that the Force is real. And they sit there like little kids with doughy eyes. It's like, oh my gosh, really? Oh, wow. It's like, you know all this shit's real. That's fucking dumb. Then they go and they shoot this laser thing off and they destroy many planets for no reason. And they're not even fighting a war. They just do it just because it's finally built and it's ready.
Because they did it in the fucking original one. That's
yes,
why.
But to for a point, right? They did it in front of Leia. They made her watch it happen. It was the thing that spurned the rebellion on to destroy the Death Star. They tried to do that again here, but instead, the rebellion doesn't do shit until Han Solo and these other dudes show up, and then they have this meeting that's literally. Just these guys sit around, they go, so I'm going to go in, we're going to turn the shields off, and you guys shoot this thing, and then we'll win. And they go, okay, wait, you guys are going to turn the shields off, we'll shoot this, and then we'll win. They go, okay, break. It's one of the fucking dumbest scenes I've ever seen.
I have a feeling that it exact scene happened in Return of the Jedi, almost verbatim.
Horrible, horrible. Nah, nothing ever happened like that in Lucas scene. You're wrong. They did come in and say things like that, but there's always a sense of the world happening off screen in those movies. You know, you were never, you know, everything is so created in this. It's set up for you to go on like a star tour of Star Wars. You know, it's not a real story thing. It just doesn't feel real. What's with the dude doing like Heil Hitler stuff to the stormtroopers? Does he really have to rally the stormtroopers?
Yeah, I didn't.
It didn't make any sense. And where's the old people? There's no one but young people in this movie, you know, except for Han Solo. But like all the generals and stuff are all young. I didn't get it. It didn't make any sense. I didn't think this was thought out.
I thought that it was a little too humorous. I thought the humor took it out. You know, the who talks now, me or you. I didn't.
It was bad, yeah.
That to me was a little.
The Han Solo death scene I thought was given away way too early, to the point where it's just like fucking kill him already. And I didn't care that he died. That was the other thing. How could you take Han Solo and make me not care about him? That's crazy. But it is a Star Wars movie, but I can't, like, you watch it and you can't consider it canon. It just feels like a fan-made movie.
That's what I said to you. It feels like
doesn't
great
feel
fan,
real.
You know, I said that about Creed, that Creed felt like great fan fiction, but somehow that felt of its world, whereas this did feel, like you said, I'll give you this about this, what you touched on, which I didn't realize until you said it, but I had the same feeling about it now, I think about it, is that there wasn't a whole lot outside of the frame, whereas the other Star Wars,
there's
felt like
nothing.
They were capturing things that were going on, and things were happening.
They were coming into things, and that shit was already going down. When they go into the, you know, there's a, like the Rebellion's actively doing shit in the first movie, and they come in to the meetings and stuff, and people are there. You have the feeling that shit's been going on. But in this movie, you get the feeling that everyone's waiting for the main characters to show up before they do anything.
Yeah, I thought it was solid. I thought because of the fact that, you know, remember I told you about the meme that was going around, the internet meme about with Newman, I think from the scene from Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
He gives him nobody cares. It's like part four. It's true, though, because this basically is exactly what the fans wanted, which was just a regurgitation of the original.
But I think we're all okay with that. Like, that part of it, it doesn't bother me. It's like, okay, fine.
Well, you're saying
it's
paying
Star
lip
Wars,
service
and that's
to the
okay,
originals.
But Yeah, I mean, Jurassic World did this, but it did it in a way better. It was just, I don't know, well, it made sense, I guess. This didn't make sense. This felt like a commercial to me. It just didn't, it fell apart quickly. It started really strong, I thought. Interesting, totally different than what Lucas would have done, and quickly just fell into a commercial. You know, it's so safe, it's so safe. And after hearing, all, you know, all the outbursts from Lucas and stuff, it's like, fuck. He's right. You know, you shouldn't have made this movie just to make a Star Wars movie. You should have made a really good movie, because this isn't something that people are going to hold on to. And I get that everyone took their kids to this and their kids loved it and everything. Mainly because, you know, PG-13 movies nowadays really should be rated PG. I don't know how it's got a PG-13 rating.
People are dying, getting stabbed.
Who cares? PG, you know, I mean, people hardly do anything in this. And I don't get it. Like, why couldn't Rin, like, fight at the end? Just all of a sudden he's no good. He, like, threw her against the tree. He's stopping lasers. He's doing all kinds of crazy shit. And then he just can't, he doesn't know how to fight.
Because we need two more movies, bro.
Yeah, we need to end.
So how'd you like the big, did you think Luke Skywalker was going to be in it more?
First of all, let me tell you something. Yeah. Because this movie has the Amazing Spider-Man problem, right? Where you're like, okay, I have this idea for a movie. Let's make it into three. You know, clearly it doesn't work, you know, very well when you do that. But first of all, if this was a real Star Wars movie, it would have ended not with them finding Luke Skywalker, with them simply going into like hyperspace to go out to find him. That's right. Where I felt like, oh, this is going to end. This is going to be perfect. It didn't, of course. It had a really horribly just ridiculous ending where she just goes to Scotland apparently and holds out the lightsaber to him, and he's like, oh, and it's cut, and it's way too long and just overly dramatic. Bad.
It was bad Shakespeare.
Right? They just kind of ruined Star Wars a little bit, but it was still a Star Wars movie, and it was cost $200 million, so it still somehow turns out to be okay.
I don't think it disappoints. It's not insulting to anybody that grew up with the originals. I think it's better than the prequels in a lot of ways.
I disagree with you on that. I think that it's very insulting. It's insulting to everyone's intelligence. I mean, shit. If this is gonna, you're talking like it should be on your 15.
Well, you're talking like it shouldn't be. It should be on your bottom 15. You hit it 9, man. Jesus Christ.
Fuck.
Stop. You didn't see Ted 2 at this point.
I'm not really that mad at Star Wars. I'm just, it's just such a letdown from what you expect from a movie that's made $812 million domestic at this point. You know, you just have an expectation of something really, really amazing, don't you?
Well, let me ask you this. And do you prefer Avatar over this?
I do. Yeah. I prefer a lot of things to this. So to me, this is just kind of it was a big budget movie. And I saw this in 4D even.
What does that mean, that they actually shot lasers at you guys?
Yeah, I got the laser burn. Nice. No, like the seats move and smoke comes out of the screen when stuff gets shot. And that, the
what do you think about the moving seats?
Because I got that
as well.
Yeah, the moving seats.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah, it was all right. I wish that they had... if you're going to sell a movie, actually do it right. But, you know, J.J. Abrams has said that the 3D was so amazing. You can see it in IMAX and this and that. And you go, and I didn't see any of that, but you go watch it and you think, where's the fucking, like, where's all the cool dogfights and shit? I mean, this doesn't literally have to be Star Wars Episode 4. You guys have a $200 million budget. Put some fucking shit in this movie.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I can't stick up for it. Like I said, I'm not going to stick up for it. I'm just going to say I thought it was solid for what it was. It was a good little time at the movies. I saw it twice. It didn't hold up second time nearly as well. Sagged in the middle quite a bit on second viewing.
That's what I thought the first time.
And I was bored. It really has about 20 minutes of extra of weight, if not more, that could be jettisoned. But and the humor was a little off kilter to me. Everyone thought this was like hilarious. I mean, I'll say this, that the audience was fucking going with it every single time I've seen it.
I don't get, I don't understand that. How? Like, how? Because it's not. How are people seeing something? How are they seeing a different movie than I saw? I really wish that I could understand that. Someone could really explain that to me, because I can't. Well, you've heard everything I've said. You know, I can't. How can you look past that?
Let's get into Hateful Eight. want to talk about Hateful Eight with you for a little bit here.
Here's another movie. This is a, we can do this.
This is
too.
A movie where I didn't put on my top 15. You put on your top 15, and I thought this was Tarantino's maybe least successful film ever. I was really disappointed in this. Yeah, I thought that this was a major letdown for multiple reasons. And this is going to be a spoiler heavy conversation. So fast forward.
If you
here.
Haven't seen it at this point, you're not going to.
Yeah, no. and I don't think you're going to be missing much if you see it at home, to be honest with you. This didn't particularly
fine.
Call for a big screen. And let's see, where do I even begin? I guess I should have realized at the title sequence that Kurt Russell wasn't the main character and that this was going to be Samuel Jackson's story, really, or he at least would be the major force in this movie. I just didn't care for anybody in this movie. I thought they were all pretty reprehensible people, and the overall mystery, I guess you will, because this is really a mystery movie, a whodunit or a who will do it, wasn't that interesting to me.
I wish it was.
I didn't give a shit. I mean, I don't really know what this this isn't really – I don't think there's much story here. For all the weird deviant subplots that happen here and the little roads it goes off and tangents and deviations, I should say, it just doesn't add up to anything. The experience didn't add up to anything. If you're going to take my fucking time for 3 hours to get to where we got to, I just was kind of – it left me cold, you know, in a lot of ways. I just did not care for it. I mean, the dialogue in spots is great. I think when he – my favorite bit of dialogue is when he said, seems that you have me as a bit of a disadvantage. And he says, seems my advantage is keeping you at a disadvantage. Like, that kind of shit is brilliantly done in that kind of banter. But the fucking monologue about the blowjob is way over the top. and really never clarified if that's serious or not, which I didn't care for at all.
It's not.
It's just a whole like the
I'm
little
fairly
tangents,
certain it isn't.
But still little tangents like that. And you had brought up that you didn't know if there was a theme. Excuse me. You didn't know there was a theme.
Well, that everyone was a liar is the only thing I could come up with.
I couldn't get a fucking theme or connective tissue to this or anything going on here. And the chapters themselves. I mean, make it about one of these characters. Putting all them together in a room, that's not that interesting. I don't know what he thought he was doing. And you don't like movies that are really stage play-y? This is a fucking play, man. This is literally characters stop moving and get quiet in the corner while other characters are talking over here. It's like the spotlight's off them in the play, but yet they're still there, you know, acting, you know, and now but our eyes over here. It's very, very stagnant like that to me. And he's not a visualist. I mean, Kevin Smith could have directed this thing.
So happy you're saying all this because this is everything that I put. I think this was my number four. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more on a lot of it. But for me, it played better than that. I mean, I really, as a play, I really liked it a lot. As far as holding my attention, and really, I think I would put that more on the shoulders of the actors. Than possibly his direction.
Who are all uniformly great. I mean, I gotta say that.
Man,
but they're all pros.
Well, okay, but fair enough. But that's not, you know, a reason not to, that's not a something that goes in the negative column. That's something that goes in the positive column.
I just expect these names good. Especially Walton Goggins, who just doesn't get enough praise. I mean, I love this guy
with
his
awesome
big choppers. Yeah, I mean, I love this kid. He's a grown man now. He's quite old.
Yeah, he's like but yeah, so I really like that a lot, but I felt like, you know, the problems, this movie has the same problems that Death Proof had for me, where wonderful in scenes and sequences and things, but then overall just really falls apart. And the ending on this, where it's just those four dudes, like it was, and you know, Channing Tatum, and they come and they just come in and like, there's no mystery. You set it up like there's a mystery. They find a jelly bean, they do this, they do that, but not really. Right. Not really. No mystery. There's just these guys just came in and this shit happened and that was it. And that was our problem with Death Proof, was that they set it up like it was going to be some kind of a neat ending and stuff. And it just ended. It was just like, we got him. Can't go about. I'm done.
It's
that's
all
how this movie
foreplay.
Was.
It's
what's
all
the fucking
foreplay,
point of it?
No
yes.
sex. It's really, it's
I agree.
Kinda like,
that's my problem.
It's this great tease, and then you realize that there's no way they can pay off the tease.
I was thinking all crazy things. I was like, holy shit, maybe Samuel L. Jackson is the killer. And the bodies that he had were the bodies of the people who were missing at the thing, you know? And maybe that's going to be the big twist. Or I was trying to put together all these amazing things in my head that he could do, and he just did nothing. He just literally ended the fucking movie. It was just like, eh, I don't know. This is what happens. It's like, dude.
And no disrespect to Tim Roth, who I thought, you know, especially in Reservoir Dogs, who's fantastic. I would have liked Steve Buscemi in here somewhere, you know, just for Reservoir Dogs, you know, almost like quasi-reunion. Because this is very similar to Reservoir Dogs in a lot of ways, with a group of people in a room and people being there for, you know, dishonest with one another and not who they say they are. But past that, I thought that Tim Roth was damn near doing a Christoph Waltz impersonation.
Yeah, I did feel that way a little bit.
I got a little irritated at that, and the Channing Tatum was extremely miscast in this movie. I like the guy in a lot of things.
That's why he's barely in it.
I know, but I mean, I heard that Mark Wahlberg was up for that role too, and I thought both those people are way too modern.
That would have been bad as well, yeah. They're way too pretty boys to be in this.
Yeah, you need some. I mean, even Gosling could have maybe done a little bit better, but that role is such a nothing role anyways. And like you said, there's no
pointless.
You know, once again, to pay off here, nothing is done on the level of his other writing. And I think that he has taken us on such strange journeys and genres, like, you know, the calf comic World War II movie, a samurai movie or a karate film, if you will, with Kill Bill and just different stuff that this one, I was willing to go with him, a Death Proof, even the Western, you know, with Django.
Yeah, Django's great as well. Yeah, but, you know, every once in a while he does stumble.
I would put this at the bottom, which I used to think was Jackie Brown, even though I like Jackie Brown, but I still would prefer Jackie Brown's kind of laid-back, laconic coolness to this this kind of a mess of storytelling. I don't know if it's because his script got leaked out and he just figured that he needs to get this out and get this done already before he overthinks it or whatever, but I felt this was unfinished. This felt like almost like a first draft.
I did, I don't know, I read somewhere that he changed the ending, but I don't know what the original ending was, so maybe there's a possibility that he just, you know, as you say, because the script leaked, he changed it, but I just, you know, I doubt it. His movies tend to, even if you look back at the really good ones, they really tend to just fucking end.
Didn't you think the blowjob sequence was way out of left field?
So out of, not only out of left field, but really uncomfortable, which is odd in a movie that's very violent and very tense. But just kind of like really? I mean, that's not even, you're going to push this guy to pick up the gun by telling him that story and just...
I thought he was trying to get to that. It is uncomfortable for obviously a reason, but I thought he was trying to recapture that moment in Pulp Fiction when Butch walks in on Ving Rhames getting, you know, fucked.
Sure.
I thought it was trying to do that, but it didn't work at all in that level.
Well, it's tough to do because, you know, so the old man deserved it, fine. But it's tough to make that or to put that across when Samuel Jackson is being so horrible.
Yeah, I know.
Right? He's not a hero, clearly. He's not being a hero. So
no one in the movie is obviously.
Heroes, yeah. Which would be fine, but you shouldn't put someone in the sense, because they did put him and Goggins as, they were kind of the heroes.
Yeah, strangely enough, All right, let's move on and talk about Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. I want to talk about this one with you because this made both of our top 10 lists. This is the first one that we're talking about.
Yeah, can I change my top 10? I like to put Mission Impossible up above Hateful Eight.
And you want to remove Star Wars.
And I want to remove Star Wars. I don't know what the fuck is wrong with this. This whole year is just, I got me fucked up with movies, you know.
Your top 10 is like a fucking game of Jenga.
I don't know what the fuck's going on anymore. But I did love this movie. I thought this was really one of the, and I'll be, you know, damned. I think the reason that I don't have the respect that I maybe should for this movie is because this is just, should be the base level for every fucking movie, you know?
It's competent. It's extremely
well done. It's very good. It's not sexist, you know? Tom Cruise is not afraid to make fun of himself, but the girl in this is his equal. And he's actually infatuated with her. He's in the one falling for her and following her around everywhere. So it turns that whole dynamic on its head. Normally you would have the girl like, oh, for the guy. She doesn't really give two shits about him in this movie.
Not only that, Alec Baldwin's whole little subplot and how cleverly that was worked out with Jeremy Renner.
Yes, I love the ending. Right, yeah. Should we just give it away now?
Well, don't give it away yet because this is still being discovered.
I was going to say, let's not give it away at all because it's not really a major part of the movie, but it's a nice little
twist.
It's a very nice little ending, little wink, wink, that they do have together when they walk out of the meeting.
I was also appreciative that his hanging off the side of the airplane, which was the front runner and the posters mm-hmm. and the advertising campaign, happened in the first 5 minutes.
I so
we kind of got that out of the way.
But
so
tell me,
waiting for that to happen. You
yes,
know?
But tell me that this wasn't. It just feels like they learned from number four what not to do. Like he comes, that whole sequence is just really great. He comes up looking like a jackass, right? Just comes up. I got it, guys. He comes up like out of the fucking grass. Who knows where he comes from, right? Just in a suit, running after the airplane when they can't fucking do it. He's there and it's like, amazing music. And he runs up and he grabs a hold of it. And then it kind of goes into that, oh, open the door. Which door? And it's a little comedy, this and that. And then the door finally opens and he goes flying into the fucking thing, right? It's fucking hysterical. And that sets the tone for that entire movie where he's not afraid. And this is, I guess, the thing that is I find so endearing about Tom Cruise is that as much of an asshole as he comes off to be, he's not afraid to poke fun at that, you know, and to, I guess, you know, make fun of himself, but also to be vulnerable.
I think that comes across in this character, too, and especially in this movie, which didn't come across in the fourth one, which we both made comments about, because that first sequence in the fourth one where he escapes the Russian prison and he's throwing the fucking pebble and it's hitting off all sides, it's so too cool for school that it's off-putting. I, in fact, dislike the fourth one passionately. I mean, the number two is my all-time favorite in this. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. I mean, I just love number two with the over-the-top John Woo shit. You know what I mean? It's my bread and butter. Yeah. I love the doves and the long hair flying and the cars smashing and shit and the fireball.
Fair enough. I got it. I'm going to rewatch it again because you see, you love it so much. I haven't seen it in a long time. I hate John Woo. American John Woo movies I hate.
I like Face Off,
so I'm
going
to watch it again.
Like that, so, I mean.
Yeah, I'm watching it again. I'll give it another shot because this one was so good. I like the third one. The fourth one I think is pretty horrendous, but yeah, this was just an all around good ass movie, man. Great action sequences, great humor.
Yeah, they finally figured out a way to make Simon Pegg's character not annoying to me.
Oh yes, for real, right? But tell me, when the opening credit sequence on this started, I just thought, oh fuck, we got another James Bond shit here going on. Like, I could watch more of these. I could literally see this as a true James Bond thing. Like, you could, I don't know who else would play Ethan Hunt, but it really had that feel to it. Like, oh, we've got this locked in. We have this figured out.
Yeah, it makes sense to me why the gross on this was so good that it, you know, has equaled the Bond movie that came out this year. And in the fact, I preferred this over the Bond film. And when I told you they were getting Macquarie to do part six here, really quick, you had texted me back with kind of a who gives a shit attitude. But I think now you're a little bit more excited as I was because I think this has reinvigorated the whole franchise.
And they have, you know, as much as everything that James Bond has, they have that with this. They have the theme music. They have a great theme music. They have a great leading man right now. I just, you know, if they could find a way to get this to continue, although they've had every other action sequence thing, kind of like Bond has had trouble breaking off from their main character. Except
I'd like
Bond,
to see
so.
This world a little bit, just one more time. But I want to say the ending of this movie I thought was pitch perfect. I thought that the way that they handled capturing the bad guy, I thought when this started and they take off and I think it was bikes or whatever, and they're chasing the guy or he's running away. I just thought, like, God, here we go on some fucking elongated action sequence. It's really just going to drown this movie. And they figure out how to capture him in the cleverest little way. Mm-hmm. It kind of just all works out, and then it ends so quietly, you know, not with a bang, but just kind of with smarts. And I just thought, like, that's a nice – and because the big action sequence is in the very beginning. Like you said, him getting on the plane, and they do that great shit with the cars and the motorcycles, and that's a great sequence in itself.
Yeah. In a way, just to move along with you say open the bang, you know, in with a whimper.
Yeah.
It in that sense, it does a very, you get the idea from this. It's called Rogue Nation. You got the idea from the trailer anyways. I thought like, oh, this is going to be like an in-game type thing. It's actually not. It's just, and that's part of the clever, I guess, tongue-in-cheek Alec Baldwin type shit we were talking about. But it just, it kind of tears it down, but then it puts it right back into place. You know, they had never lost control, really, right?
Right, yeah.
You know, this was never going to be the end Mission Impossible. They're prepared for more.
That's the great kind of like wink, wink at the audience as well. It's like, oh, well, if you like this one, we got more for you. You know what I mean? Like, it could be the last one, but it's not. Ha ha, you know? But it leaves you not feeling unsatisfied at all. So I thought this one really delivered.
Agree.
Great popcorn summer movie. Exactly what I would think of when I think of great summertime movies, you know, the kind of thing I want to see in June. All right. What do we got?
I agree.
Let's talk about No Escape. Let me know about this one, because you say it's good. I've heard it's really good from people, and it makes money.
I wouldn't say it's really good. I'd say it's solid. It's good. It's, you know, to try to play the realistic card on this, it goes way too far on some of the, on a lot of the action sequences to be anything considered realistic. You know, you're kind of making a thriller movie. There's a line between, you know, thriller and Die Hard.
Right.
So we go a little bit too far, but it's never actually Die Hard. You know, he's really always himself. He doesn't turn into some action star.
Well, how's your boy Owen Wilson and Pierce Brosnan in this?
They're right? Both very good in this. I mean, Owen Wilson's great. He's very, you know, he's believable as the guy who would do whatever he needs to do to save his family, to get his family out of this. And you know, Pierce Brosnan is barely in it, but he's basically James Bond. So that's cool.
I expect him to be whenever I see him. You know what I mean? Yeah. No matter what I see him in, I expect him to be James Bond.
But yeah, I thought the movie itself was, I thought, very effective as far as being very quick to the point. You know, you get your they're on the airplane, they show up at the place, they meet Pierce Brosnan. You know, of course, they will later on re-hook up with him. You know, and later on in the movie, of course, get to the hotel and everything. And, you know, shit starts to go bad. It's just well made. It opens up with a little teaser showing you, you know, things are already not well. And it's pretty much everything you would expect to feel on screen there if you were stuck in that situation, you know? And you had a family with you and stuff. It is a really good B movie, yeah. So, yeah, good movie. You know, worth seeing, I think.
He's also saw another B movie, which is American Ultra, and you quite like this one as well. Huh?
I liked American Ultra as well. Yeah, great little B movie. Kind of a play on Born Identity.
It's Born Identity mixed with a stoner comedy, right?
Essentially, yeah. Kind of a dark, you know, edgy movie.
I heard this got shit on because of the tones were all over the place, that it mixes comedy with crazy violence.
It does, but you know what? I like that kind of stuff, so that was okay with me. I think that kind of a world is fine to exist on screen. I don't know why people have
you bought
an
Eisenberg?
Issue with that.
You bought him as a hero?
You know, there are times when you think, maybe bad casting. Yeah, but for the most part, he's pretty good. I mean, he's playing such opposite ends of the spectrum, you know, a geeky little pothead boy suddenly, you know, can do amazing moves and stuff, so it kind of works for the surprise aspect of it, I guess. And he's, you know, always good, but just I don't know if it's always believable. You know, he's up against people that look like they would just beat the shit out of him in real life. He's a little boy, you know, he's a man child, and he's up against Goggins, you know, he's up against real men. Yeah, I guess that's my review.
Well,
it's good.
That?
I mean, people get killed in this movie. You know,
how's
they
the
don't,
script? Because it's Max Landis.
Punches. They
was writing this thing, and I was wondering what
kill
his,
people.
He was really championing this movie. Max Landis was. And,
it's a fine script. You know, it's a CIA type thing, and so that's, I think, always good. I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's fun stuff.
It's done well. You know, it's not. I mean, Connie Britton's really good in it. Who else is in this? You know, that 70s boy, Venom. I like to call him Venom because no one remembers he was Venom.
Is it Topher?
Topher Grace, yeah.
Of course I remember Venom. I love Venom in the Spider-Man 3. Yeah, characters.
Nobody remembers that shit. Yeah, I mean, everyone's really good in this. So, yeah, Bill Pullman's in this for about 2 seconds. They got him. He took a break from Independence Day.
Good old Pill Bowman.
But yeah, I mean, good action or a fun movie, I thought. I loved the violence mixed with the silliness. So I was down to it. I like movies that surprisingly kill people that you don't really want to see dead, you know, that you wouldn't really expect that they would kill them, but they do just because, I mean, fuck it, that's what would happen, you know, in that situation. People would get shot, you know. And normal movies don't really have the balls to go ahead and pull that trigger, you know? So I like movies that do.
Well, I saw Point Break this weekend, and I gotta say, what a depressing, downbeat fucking experience that was. I mean, this is like, It's like going to see a buddy you haven't seen in 20 years and realizing the guy's a fucking slob. He's dying, you know? It's like he's turned into Chris Christie or something. I mean, this is fucking bad. It's no good. It vaguely resembles the guy you used to know, but it's not really the same person. Because the stunt sequences are fantastic, and it starts off with a great little motocross scene, but the problem is this movie hasn't learned anything from the first movie. It takes all the peripheral elements.
Is there
and
anything
says,
to learn from the first movie?
Well, the fact that of how it all works. I mean, the plot element it takes, which has been done to better effect in the Fast and Furious 1. Uh-huh. But then it tries to infuse this weird spirituality. Like it saw that was the Swayze character had that in the first one. But this one, they're going to go way above and beyond. And it's about this group. Because the first time, the guys were robbing banks to just finance their surfing in the party lifestyle year-round. Well, no, not this time. These guys are like Robin Hood. They're stealing and giving back to the poor and giving back to Mother Nature because they're basically extreme environmentalists. And they're trying to do this series of 8 obstacles that lead you in spiritual enlightenment. It's a fucking bit of mumbo-jumbo. And the whole time I'm watching these guys with bad haircuts with these rat tails flying around. I swear to God, I wanted to cut these guys' fucking hair and shower them. I was like, good God. These aren't like the cool guys that you're trying to get in with. These are the guys that like fucking stink at the party. And you're like, get away from me, hipster. It's all bad.
That's too bad. What's on-screen presence like? Because you can't really beat the on-screen presence of the original Point Break. And that's something that Fast and Furious was able to recreate. Do these guys hold any weight on screen at all?
Fuck no. Are you kidding me? There's no one that's – I said this in my review on the site that I just posted that it makes you appreciate the presence of Keanu Reeves, honestly, and Patrick Swayze because these guys
They command the screen really. Surprisingly to say that about either one of them, but it's true.
Luke Bracey needs to go away already. I mean, I don't like this fucking – he's like a wannabe Hemsworth. He's with less talent. This guy fucked up November Man. Now he's like the new Jai Courtney. Now he's in this as the Keanu Reeves, and he can't even do the Keanu Reeves role right. And Edgar Ramirez is such a fucking oddball choice as this role that, you know, you don't buy him for a second as being even like an alpha male physically or spiritually.
Why didn't they get the guys from that fighting movie? Was that the name of the movie? The fake Tom Cruise and the fake Brad
You're
Pitt.
Talking about Never Back Down?
Never Back Down. Should have got those guys.
Hey, that would have been better casting, to be quite honest with you. At least the homoeroticism would have been more pronounced and less subtle than in this one because it's there still. But I mean, even in this, you know, the female, they changed the female character, her whole function in the plot, and for no reason. Just so – and it's almost like they're rushing. And my biggest problem with this movie is besides that it's not really about surfing, which the first one was all about surfing. But the fact that the last scene in the first one is so haunting and well done and just – it's just such a great fucking ending to that movie. And in this one, they botched the shit out of it. It's essentially the same thing, but it's done so poorly and with such bad CGI that – you don't give a shit. It kind of comes off as just another idiot act by this guy as opposed to like this sacrifice. I can't explain it. It's really, really bad.
Well, I think everyone figured it was bad from the trailer.
Oh,
nobody
man.
Went and saw it.
What a fucking letdown. What a letdown. I mean, why even remake it? Pisses me off.
Yeah, that's what we've been saying.
All right, briefly, I'll talk about The Big Short, which I put at number 2 for the year. This was a 4-star movie. I mean, great, great movie. I can't recommend this to you enough because I know you like Wall Street movies. Mm-hmm. And this is hyper-intelligent and has some of that kind of wit that you'd see in like a made-for-HBO movie to where, you know, like the ones about Phil Spector and things like that, even if it's a different subject matter. But kind of the way it's handled like that, it's almost handled comically. That this could happen. And Steve Carell's character is so interesting and you want to stay with him because of the fact he's so angry. But on our side, if you will, because everyone will say it's our side, it's us against them, us against the bankers. It's well done. And everybody is extremely well cast. This is the difference in this movie is from the big roles to the really the even Max Greenfield shows up in a very,
Wait,
very
is there
small
a banker? These guys are all
well, it's
These
a collection
aren't
of
the bankers, right?
Well, I mean, there's a trader who's Gosling. There's an ex-trader who's Pitt. There's a couple of hedge fund managers of varying degrees that kind of is Carol and Bale.
But is someone that they're going up against in this?
Our buddy Byron Mann, who we interviewed, is in this movie as a banker. But there's not any set banker. It's the banks in general. There's no face to the to the evilness here. It's just an
what's
overall...
the crux of the problem then? I mean, what's the issue? You know, I get that they would. I've seen the trailer. They notice this thing, and then they go, and they do it, and everyone's like, "You're betting against the banks. You're betting against the American economy. Oh my God!"
Because it
but
was all bullshit.
The, what does
because
that do?
Because the market was going up as everything was suggesting it should be going down. So they were losing. They were bleeding money for quite a long time with their hedge funds and their investors.
So just
and, they had to wait
whether
it out.
They should do it or not was
right.
The whole,
and to get out if they were crazy, if, you know, because people were saying that this was, you know, never going to happen. Mm-hmm. And who doesn't pay mortgages and things like that. And so the movie does a very good job of explaining this. And what they say to you in the opening monologue was that this is, you know, banking is designed with big words and tough acronyms to make you feel stupid because they want you to think that they're more intelligent than you, that you couldn't possibly understand what they're doing. And what this movie does is break things down in a very simplistic way, and it'll even stop and it'll say, hey, this is celebrity chef Anthony Bourdain to explain how this works. And he'll talk about food, but use the analogy of what the bank's doing, and it make it, and you're like, oh, I get it. So it's very I think that's why it's connecting with audiences, because it's easily explainable and digestible, and it will enrage your ass. It really will. You'd be like, holy shit, I can't believe this was fucking happening. Yeah. And you lived through it. I mean, you're a homeowner. You lived through this. So you shall see.
Oh, I didn't live through this.
Well, we lived through this, you know, stocks. And
this happened. This is the thing that that allowed me to buy a home for very cheap. there you go. I'm actually glad this happened.
Well, you and Steve Carell's character. But there was a lot of people that did not benefit from this at all. So, although the movie is worth seeing, you will benefit from seeing it. And it's just a great piece of storytelling. Really, really fantastic storytelling. All right. What's last? Oh, I got it. Strange Magic.
I have not. This is based on a George Lucas story idea.
Which is basically good? A Midsummer Night's Dream.
It's a Midsummer Night's Dream, right? Which I really don't like that. I've never liked that, but.
It's so bizarre. I really can't. I can't tell you if it's.
But in what way? Like in the way that it doesn't even make sense.
In like those early '80s Disney fucking releases, like those animated releases, like Black Cauldron, before they got good again with The Little Mermaid, that are just kind of fucking weird, you know? And you're like, huh? First of all, it's all pop music that Lucas picked, which is all themes about love, which sounds, you know, pretty easy. But it's a collection of things. But it's like bad karaoke. So it's not like it's new songs they're singing that are good. It's just songs you're familiar with that are sung fairly badly or not by the person you're familiar with them. And there's a few eccentric characters that are kind of amusing, and there's a moment or two here, but it really steals a lot from Epic, that movie from a few years back, even the visual style of it. Although some of the characters are straight out of Star Wars, which I really like the Insect King. So I'm giving this a 2-star rating because I'm in the middle on it. I like the character design of it, but a fairly bizarre and I think frightening concoction for kids. So.
Unfortunately, straight out of Star Wars, not straight out of Compton, huh?
Yeah, exactly. It would have done better if it was straight out of Compton. You got to see Straight Out of Compton. I highly recommend
it. There's a lot of shit I got to see still.
Yes, sir.
But even then, I don't think it's going to save my view of the year.
So I think the big takeaways from today's show is that I did not include Mad Max in my top 15, even though I championed it all summer.
Even though you should have, apparently, from all the shit that we've been talking about, everything.
And the big takeaway on your side is that you included Star Wars, even though you did not champion it at all.
And Hateful Eight, apparently.
And Hateful Eight, which it sounds like you disliked both of those movies.
I should have put Mission Impossible up higher.
There you go.
I don't know what happened.
We've learned an important lesson on the show tonight. We've learned an important lesson.
We don't know anything about movies.
Right, but that's what we've known for a long time. Even though we're accredited, we don't know much about films.
But I can't make top 10 lists.
Well, it's hard to do, especially in a year when you weren't too keen on the releases here, apparently. But I did think that this was the top 5 on both of our lists are pretty solid. Mm-hmm. So I'll give it that.
Yeah, still a movie's worth seeing, definitely for sure. And this year, you know, hopefully we get surprised. You know, it's really. I miss that, the surprise. Yeah, we don't get that very often anymore. To be able to go see a movie and be like, oh, wow, that was amazing. I had no idea that would be that good. Instead, I feel like I go see things and I go, that was okay. Tell me, that's not the biggest letdown for anyone that's truly out there as a collector, you're trying to collect movies, right? You're trying to watch things that you want to remember. And then to have it just be okay is not the best.
that's, I think, what happens most of the time is we go to the movies so often and you see things that are just okay or subpar.
It's happening now more than ever, you know, and yeah. I think because they're out there for the buck, you know, and not for, as Lucas said, you know, it's not, it's about the story. It's not all about, you know, spaceships. And that translates to pretty much everything that we're seeing nowadays, you know, and sometimes rightfully it fails, like Point Break. And sometimes I don't know rightfully so much that it should do that well, but Star Wars, you know, is going to make $1 billion. I don't know.
Talk about the highest grossing. Let's hold back on that 1 second. It's going to eclipse Avatar. It says it has already.
But
Avatar sold 97 million tickets. And that's not even that's just ticket counts. Oh, yeah, this is estimated at about 95 million tickets. So it is going to eclipse it. But if it wants to beat Titanic, we're looking at 135 million tickets sold. That's really going to be another 40 million tickets is going to be hard to do. But having said that, it's not going to beat Avatar's 2.7 worldwide. It would still need to make another billion dollars. That's a little bit surprising.
Yeah, I mean the China, you know, launch is good, but it's not stellar. Even though it's going to be breaking records, whatever. It died. Yeah, that's the problem with these things, right? It's hard to tell anymore when something's going to die because it's so front loaded. But it did kind of die pretty quickly.
It says is that Avatar was a little bit more digestible on a global scale with translations and subtitling and things like that. So the fact that that made $2 billion outside of
the theaters, there was nothing else out
there. Crazy.
There's nothing else out there like Avatar.
Yeah, it was a singular experience during
that
time.
Point. So it's kind of, I guess, unfair. It's really amazing that Star Wars has done what has done again, right? Obviously setting records, set records here. Set records elsewhere. It's pretty crazy. So people love Star Wars.
I still think that Avatar is a stronger film than the new Star Wars. I'll say that.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of things are bad that I didn't think I would say. You know, I never thought I thought for sure Star Wars would have been better.
Yeah, let's leave people with the bad taste in their mouth as we close out episode
Mission Impossible.
Yeah, go see that and see Creed already. I can't wait for you to see Creed.
Gotta see Creed and The Big Short and everything. Yes. I'm trying to see The Martian too. You saw The Martian? That didn't make your top 15.
It didn't. I didn't. But you know, it's definitely not a comedy. It wasn't one of the funniest movies of the year. That's for
Are
sure.
Are you sure?
No, Ricky
Gervais said it was.
Do you know what's cool about The Martian though? I do want to say I saw a clip from this. Is that on the Blu-ray? There is a 90-minute making of documentary that's shot with everybody in character. It's a mockumentary, but it's about how they got the guy home, basically, you know, kind of the technical science behind it. It's kind of like a NASA doc, but everybody's playing their character.
Okay.
It's pretty interesting.
But it's not real science.
Well, no, it's not real science. It was not. No, Neil deGrasse Tyson is not
in
there.
Is he on there? Does he say it's real? He's always debunking these movies.
Yeah. He'd have a field day with Star Wars.
He already did. He told me some Star Wars stuff wasn't real. I don't believe it.
The Force is real, bro.
Yeah, I think it's real.
I use it to get my remote control when I'm on the shitter. That's how I would use the Force, straight up.
And your TV is in there, too? Or your shitter's in the living room?
My whole place is a shitter. Yeah, I've never been around. Yeah, all right, let's go ahead and close it out. Thank you guys for joining us on this first episode. We'll be back next week with a new episode and... as always, go to moviemavericks.com. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!